Rangers Rambles.
And I believe we're live.
So you can hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we are live. Okay. Yeah, live. Great. Happy New Year, everyone. This is Raiders Rambles. I am Inu. I am not your chief host, Jilt. He's a little busy right now. With us, we have Avera. We also have Cross, and we have Sparky. Avera, take it away, brother.
Alrighty. Well, welcome, everyone, to the first episode of the Raiders Rambles 2020. Yes, so this is going to be rather exciting. As Inu said before, Jilt is not with us today, as he is very busy doing things with his human persona at this place called Work, where they, they use money to buy things, and it's just obnoxious. So whatever. he'll be back next week. But for now, we have Inu, our tech expert. Me, your most humblest and most baddest of the orange doggos, Sparky and Cross, to talk about some incredible things tonight. First of all, in regards to the new year, how was your new year, guys? Like, you want to start? Like, what did you do?
My new year was really nice and really boring and really quiet. I went to my uncle's house. We got sprayed with champagne because my cousin got really drunk and sprayed us all.
Okay.
But I mean, no tables got flipped. Nobody got cussed out. So it was nice.
All right. All right. Sparky, how was your New Year's?
It was good. I got a camcorder and all that stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, fun stuff. Cross, what did you do on New Year's?
I was up in New York, so my mother got invited to a New Year's party with a bunch of her coworkers, and I know a lot of them, so they invited me. And I can't stay up that late anymore.
Oh,
I'm getting old.
I think, we're pretty close in age, but all right, I feel you. That sounds nice, though.
Yeah, it was fun. A lot of drinking. Cool.
Oh, yeah, of course. On New Year's, obviously.
Well, I had a drive, so they did a lot of drinking.
Ah,
so.
Bummer. All right. Let's see. As for me, my New Year's, I actually went to a fur con. Ah!
Nice.
As I do every year, yeah. It's called New Year's Furry Ball, or NYFB. I believe it's in Delaware. And if you'd like to share a picture of the main group photo type of thing?
Yes, sure. You're going to see a little bit of a flash at the beginning, but I will get to it now.
Super. Oh, okay. Well, that was me at a room party. Me being all neon and glowing and wonderful.
You look fantastic in that neon.
You can even tell how bright it was, because like, you can look at the wall behind me and be like, damn, like the wall is glowing because I'm glowing.
And then
black lights.
Yep. But yeah, so this was New Year's Furry Ball 2020. And yep.
Aww.
That's me in front of the Christmas tree. We had over 540 people that attended. Now, I personally think that the attendance rate is a little bit higher than that, because like a lot of people were ghosting. But yeah,
That's always the thing. I mean, I think you count by how many registered people there are.
Yeah, exactly. So we had 541.
Oh, hey, I found a candy corn doggo right here somewhere.
Ah, you got me. Yep. That's me, Cooper Tom, and Dashing Fox. Yeah, that was fun. So, what happened at New Year's Furry Ball? Oh, boy. It was a lot better than Apocalypse.
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, better in the sense like the hotel was better. As you know, Apocalypse was basically falling apart.
Yeah, I'm sure the hotel didn't try and kill you at any point.
Oh my god, the hotel tried to kill us. It really did. But no, the nearest furry ball hotel. Okay, so Furpok is my favorite con, but I think this is like number two. And the reason is, like, it's such a beautiful place. You know, it really is, though. Like, it's white marble, and I don't know. It's just a nice place. Also, every single room is a suite. So I got a room by myself this convention.
Nice.
And it was like a miniature apartment. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, there was a living room, a bedroom, and, like, a full bathroom, and, like, all this crazy stuff. A little kitchen area.
The last time I was at Furpok, I got a room that you can seriously play football in it. It was that big because it was a corner room.
Oh, but, yeah, okay.
But well, it used to be a Crown Plaza. Then it went to Radisson. Then it was bought by Red Lion, I think.
Yeah.
I heard from somebody because they just lost their tax license. They're not doing anything anymore. But that's good because they just moved Furpok to Southern Connecticut?
Yes.
New location?
Same state, but an hour closer to, an hour closer west.
Yeah, and it's a, I think it's a Crown Plaza. It's either a Crown Plaza or a...
It is a Crown Plaza.
It is a Crown Plaza.
Yeah, it does look beautiful, to be honest. Now,
But New Year's Furry Ball sounds really nice, too. I wish I could have made it.
Oh, it was great, yeah. And it keeps on growing bigger every year. This year
I wish
really
I could go northeast to any of those conventions.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, like, this one is pretty far from where you are. Like, I know you're in Texas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this was in Delaware, so that's quite a bit of a distance. It's not super big, but it's definitely worth it.
It's a comfortable con.
You know, TFF is big, and the interior is very nice also.
Oh, yeah, that's something very close to you, which is good. Thing is, like, there's a lot of furry cons, like, in the northeast area. You know, you have Furpok, Anthrocon, Annie, all those. So, and I go to all those. You know, it's just something that I really, I'm thankful that I live in this area for, I guess.
But never been to TFF.
I've never been to TFF, no. Maybe one day.
TFF, I went to last year, and I was just in, where was I? I think it was in Capel, which wasn't far from where the convention was. And it's, in terms of size, it's probably like Furpok, but the space is definitely a lot bigger. But it was fun. I mean, that's too small of a con for me to want to travel that far.
You even got the Reunion Tower, which is that ball is, inside that ball is actually a restaurant.
Yeah, I didn't go in that because I was just there for like
a couple hours. You can go outside.
Yeah, there was a line for it. It looked like it was pretty cool.
You can look outside through the balcony. You can see everything.
Wow, very nice. Now, I did hear there's another New Year's related furry con. Not the one I've been to, but I think it's... is it either farther south or farther north of Long Island? But this is like a big one. You guys ever, like, do you know what I'm talking about, or no?
No idea. I've only heard.
I do not.
I've only heard the one in Delaware.
No, the only downside is that hotel foods don't taste that good.
Oh. No, but like there is that one, but then there's like one other one. I think I might be in Philadelphia. But I'm probably just guessing at this point. I really don't know. I know there's another one. And it's something I wanted to go to.
All right. You said Philadelphia, and that just rung the bell because it's Furrydelphia.
That's not a New Year's con, though.
No. It's not New Year's.
Oh, no. Okay.
But, yeah. It was.
I'm going to try going to Tales and Tornadoes for a con also.
Now, what I usually do is, like, good. Every time I go to the newest furry ball, I'm typically in, like, the main ballroom area, you know, where they have the big countdown. But this year, I wasn't. I was at a room party chilling with another raider, Voltage. And
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was actually pretty cool to meet him in person. He's a really nice guy. I was actually on one of his podcasts, I believe a couple
of Room Party, doing a...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Doing yeah, drugs that I have no idea what they are.
Well, remember, all these rooms are suites, so they're huge. Like, you can invite, like, 20 people in your room, you know, have a little area where, like, there's alcohol and stuff. Another corner, there's a DJ, you know, you got, like, lights and weird crap going on. Like, yeah, Room Parties are awesome. But yeah, so we were chill, like right when the New Year's happened, we were all chilling on the main balcony looking over the atrium. And remember, Inu, you said that someone sprayed champagne on you?
Yeah.
Well, that happened to me too.
Oh, God.
I was chilling with Red Fox and the Goon Squad.
I love Red Fox.
Yeah,
oh, my God, he's such a party animal.
Seriously, though, like, that's the Room Party I was in.
I want to say Red Fox at one point during Furfocalypse had a bouncy castle inside his room.
Yes, he did. Oh, my God. And the freaking, like, the hotel staff, like, they walked in on us. And they were looking around, and they just gave us this look like, bruh. That can't be here. Get it out. Oh, and then I heard, oh, fuck. I forgot who it was that brought the bounce house, but, like, I know he had to take one of his seats out of his car and leave it on the side of the road just to bring the bounce house home.
Jesus.
Yeah, like, yeah, the bounce house was worth more than his seat from, like, a Mercedes or something.
Yeah, you know what? I can only imagine what kind of party that was. If it was Red Fox.
Wild. Red always hosts the most amazing parties. And, like, so, like, yeah, that's what we were doing on New Year's. So, of course, I was, you know, already totally gone. I was out the door, you know, into Valhalla.
Oh, yeah.
We're hanging over the balcony, you know, counting down to New Year's, even though we're already, like, 30 seconds late. like our drunken furry asses are just like, 10, 9, and, like, everyone's already cheering that the New Year's happened. But
you forgot how to count?
Yeah, I guess so. And then some guy behind all of us, I only had my tail on at the time, thank God. But some guy behind us shakes up a bottle of champagne, pops that shit, and just sprays everyone.
Oh, I would have been...
voltage, like, everyone. Like, there's, like, 10 of us on the balcony. We all get drenched in champagne.
Oh, my God. I would have been so worried about a fursuit. Oh, God.
Yeah. So, thankfully, I was able to clear my tail. But, oh, my God, that was an experience.
Only because champagne is so damn sticky.
It really is, though. And he had, like, the apple version of it. Like, it was, like, some weird, like, apple-flavored, sticky, stupid-ass champagne type of shit. Whatever
it's like,
it was.
Yeah, forgetting how to count. It's like, well, some of your brain cells are dead.
Well, yeah, we were all pretty fucked up. But anyway, yeah, that was my New Year's experience. It was fun.
Man, that sounds really fun.
And there goes Avira wasting our PG-13 rating on an F word.
Demonetized.
Oh, please. We're not monetized until we have over 1,000 subscribers. We're not there yet, so we're fine.
So we're garbage. No.
PG-13 rating. Oh, come on. We're talking about people drinking at parties on New Year's. I mean, come on. Anyways.
Sneaking into room parties.
Are there any live comments going on the YouTube?
That's what my... I don't know if there's live comments.
Hey, it's Boxcar. Hey, Boxcar. How you doing, man? Let's see. Who else? SDX. Toonie, welcome to the stream, guys.
All right.
Yeah, so you be sneaking into those room parties like James Bond, eh?
Oh my God, I totally undercover popping into all them parties like it ain't nobody's business. That brings us into our second topic.
My mom told me that marijuana actually makes you lazy.
Well, then.
But I don't know.
I suppose it could.
But then it's like you get off it and you get mad at people. Very easy.
That sounds more like an alcohol type of thing.
Well, aside from that, I'm sure James Bond can probably hit a bong and be okay because he's good like that. But what if
he's already so chill? Yeah, he's focused. He knows what he's doing. Right. So, this is our second topic in regards to 007 himself, the agent James Bond, which, if you guys remember, about a month and a half ago, we actually had this topic on our podcast where the director, or one of the producers, I believe, of the newest James Bond movie said they're going to gender bend him and make him a woman. Well, just recently, they kind of went back on that word there. And now they're saying, oh, never mind, that's not actually what we meant.
Yeah, I'm looking at the at one of the stories right now.
All right, so just want to read a little bit of this and we'll talk about it.
Despite growing calls for increased gender representation in movies, James Bond will remain male, according to the spy film series producer.
So despite growing calls for gender representation, what, like, so a character who is a particular type of way, you have to change that because of representation, and that's going to make things better?
What got me was the last line in this article. Let me find it. Here we go. In May, industry sources revealed intimacy coaches had been hired on the set of the new Bond movie, No Time to Die. Producers hired the consultants to ensure that the stars, including the new Bond girl, Ana de Armas, I can't say her name, felt empowered, according to a report in The Sun. A Film Insider explained that the movie was part of an effort to get #MeToo compliant.
What? What a weird reason to do that.
wait a minute. Okay, are they insinuating that James Bond, you know, being the ladies' man he is somehow like a Me Too predator? What?
It also has a lot of things to do with toxic masculinity and.
Hasn't James Bond been around since like the 60s?
Yeah, at least, right?
He's
an iconic hero. Oh, come on.
Maybe later, maybe the 70s, but I know it's been. James Bond has been a thing for a while.
25 films.
Wait a minute. How many films?
25.
25 films?
Yeah, oh, I think I've seen three of them.
I've
never seen any of the Roger Moore, the Sean Connery ones.
I never saw the Sean Connery ones either.
besides that bad CGI of surfing the wave with a freaking parachute.
Oh, that was weird. Yeah, that was a weird one. I would never do that. Like
that was obviously like blue screen in your face.
Oh yeah, it was totally unrealistic. And then he like jumps off on the beach, like after the wave crashes, like this 100-foot wave, like this magical parachute, and somehow survives. Like, okay, only James Bond can pull that off. But I guess that's toxic masculinity, right?
Let's see if I can read this without stuttering, because I do stutter a bit.
All right, where are we?
No Time to Die. We'll see the British actor Daniel Craig reprising his role as Bond for the first time. Feminists and progressives have sometimes criticized depictions of the swaggering, womanizing British Secret Service agent as endorsing toxic masculinity. GQ
they're going to have a good point when the sentence starts out with feminists and progressives. Yeah, I'm going to take them seriously.
But GQ writer Joshua Rivera penned an essay for the newly woke men's publication, taking aims at Bond's purportedly regressive masculinity. Despite being portrayed by six men across two dozen films, there are really only two James Bonds, the suave character of the film franchise and Ian Fleming's creation, a bastard to the core, Rivera wrote in 2018. Yep.
Well, that's strike two against our PG-13. Oh boy. Wait, so there's only two representations? I mean, we all know who James Bond is, right? Like, oh, actually, I did hear about like some theory that the term 007 is actually just like a title that any spy could have.
007 is like his, you can think of it like his agent number. So kind of like when you get a job, you're assigned a number, like your employee number, like that's like their employee number, call sign, whatever. So when they're communicating, they don't use actual names when they're communicating through radios. They just use that number.
So like a police officer has his badge number. Craig has his 007 number.
Yeah, but like but unlike a badge number, like the 007 is like his identity.
Oh, you see, that's not what I was thinking. I was thinking that like 007 could be used for anyone who could aspire to be that role. Like, let's say in 30 years from now, there could be a new 007.
That probably could if they recycled that number, but the likelihood, especially with Bond being who he is, it's like they wouldn't recycle that number.
No, I know, but
it
would be a good explanation because, like the article said, six people have portrayed this character. So that would explain why there's, you know, Sean Connery is not the same thing as, you know, some other British guy.
It's six different casters, but it's the same agent. Like it's always been James Bond. It didn't go from James Bond to somebody else. It's always been James Bond. It's just been different people portraying.
Six different men.
Right. So obviously, James Bond decided to become Jamie Bonda. And, you know, had a sex change operation because he/she was a transgender. And we just have to accept that.
Is that the actual reasoning that they were saying? Or is it just
no, that's something I'm just character. Literally making up right now.
All right.
I believe the article said something about James Bond being played by a woman of color.
Why?
Well, I think Harrison Ford played 007 also, didn't he?
He played Indiana Jones, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to do it, I don't care. But
Harrison Ford played Indiana Jones.
Like he did with the Ghostbusters.
Harrison Ford played Indiana Jones, and he played Han Solo in the original Star Wars.
Yeah.
And he crashed a plane in the park.
Wait, what?
He crashed. Han Solo crashed a plane before in a park.
He'll never fly another one.
Well,
there's like pictures online of so it's like Han Solo plane, Harrison Ford plane crash, and there's like pictures online where he crashed somewhere near.
Yeah, he almost landed on top of an American 737, too.
Jesus.
Yeah, he mistook a taxiway for a runway, and there was a plane sitting there getting ready to take off. He's like, oh. And I think it was the tower that told him, you are not landing in the right spot. And he almost landed on it.
Big oof. But anyway.
Andy crashed in a field, I think. Actually, it's more like a park, and he's like,
"I don't know anything about that."
He survived, so that's good, I guess. So, what do you guys think about this, though? Like the director actually saying that they're not going to gender bend the character. You think that's like?
Well, it's his decision. He's the director, so he gets to decide what he wants to do. And if that's not what he wants to do, then that's not what's going to happen. So,
yeah, yep, fair point.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of people are upset because they thought, because like what it seems what happened is he misspoke and saying, oh, well, yeah, we're going to make 007 a woman of color and whatnot. And then a little while later, they were like, no, we're not actually doing that. And everyone got all upset. Oh, you're not representing.
Well, then find somebody that's willing to do it. Go out, find a director, get the licenses that you need to do it, and then do it. I don't understand the problem. Do it yourself if you don't like the way somebody else is doing it.
Well, here, exactly. I'm gonna go back to this to the same article again and read this off. Last year, former Bond girl Ava Green responded to the internet's activists call for the next Bond to be played by a woman or a black man. She told reporters at a red carpet event in March that while she is supportive of women, 007, quote unquote, should be played by a man.
I'm actually trying to think of a black male actor that would actually do a really great job as James Bond. Like, I'm legitimately thinking.
Samuel Jackson.
Yes. No, I think he's a little too He doesn't have like that womanizer part of him to be able to do.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to think.
Yeah, you like that martini shaking, don't you? Yes, you do. Yes, you do, mother fluffer.
I feel like maybe 20 years ago, like Morgan Freeman could have probably done it.
Yeah, but again, he doesn't have that. In none of his personas does he have that womanizer type like personality to him.
Not too charismatic.
Yeah.
Oh, how about Will Smith?
Maybe back in his prime he could have did it, or like maybe Denzel Washington, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Because he's been in a lot of like weird sort of, not like spy movies, but like mystery movies and like investigative stuff. But maybe he could have did it. Like, again, like back when he was in like his quote unquote prime.
Yeah, like 1997.
Back in his John Q days. Great movie, by the way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All right. Well, I think we can...
The guy Martin that played Carlton on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, my God, no. Jesus. I just think of the Carl dance and just how cringe that was.
He does that after he completes the mission and gets the girl. He does that. And
fades
to black.
How the hell could he get the girl when he does that? Like, come on. She'd be like, you know what? Thank you, but I'll see you later. Maybe we can get coffee or something. Bye. And she'd leave.
I just need to agree with one of these live comments. I love the N64 007 games. Not very familiar with the movies. I am right there with you. I've only seen...
Yeah, you know, most of my 007 experience has been with the video games, not so much the movies.
Yeah.
All right. I wonder if James Bond was ever in... go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no. I was just going to say we can probably put this topic to bed, unless you had anything else to say about it.
I was actually going to transition, but yeah, go ahead, take it.
Hey, well, there we go. Well, all right. Speaking of putting this topic to bed, like the producer did, with not giving in to the crazy demands from the feminists and the progressives for representation, now we have something even more interesting. It turns out that the Olympics, 2020 Olympics, hosted in Tokyo, they're using cardboard-built beds for their competitors. And there's a few reasons for this. They've actually conducted experiments on the matter, which is a little frightening. So these beds are made out of cardboard, and it's because they're environmentally friendly, and they also promote fraternization.
Wink. Those beds will bend under any slight weight.
Yeah. And this is a little strange. Now Tokyo has always had a very interesting.
You're gonna sit on the edge of the bed and it looks like it got smashed with a car.
Yeah, that might work for Japanese athletes, but you got people from all over the world coming there. That bed's not gonna fit a lot of people.
Well, that's what I'm saying about how Japanese, they've always had a very interesting way of, having people slumber.
Wood beds are environmentally friendly.
I don't know. I'm saying like they have like the capsule hotels and like the weird places that you can sleep in like a cubby for like $900 a night and it's like totally fine.
Like, get a wood bed.
Well, that's that. They said something about that. They said that even wooden beds, would break under the circumstances that they are trying to say. It's like I read through the entire article just before the thing, and it said because, well, what happens when, you know, someone who's competing in the Olympics, let's say because they got knocked out in the first round, they've still got like 16 days to hang out and do what they want. It's literally, they said it's like Club Med for 16 days. Let me see if I can find that. 2 days of Club Med on steroids. It's a ramped up, hyped up Club Med if you no longer have to compete.
They're sleeping on cardboard, right?
It's like we gotta remain environmentally friendly because man-made climate change.
You know, when I was 10 years young, my daddy said, y'all can't complete the Olympics. Y'all gonna be sleeping on cardboard in the streets. But my mama, she told me, y'all gonna make it. Little Jeremiah, y'all gonna make it. You play that basketball, you join that Olympics, and you ain't gonna be sleeping on no cardboard. But now,
what the hell are you talking about?
Daddy, you were right.
Oh my goodness. Well, he said because.
My goodness. Where did that come from? I don't have no idea.
Oh, wait, climate change isn't real.
Can we, like, shoot him for the rest of the show?
They say because the beds will support two large people if they're having sex. So long as it sticks to two people and no more than two people. In other words, no crazy threesomes.
I love how they have to introduce that topic that, like, oh, two people, and if they're having sex. Why would you say that? Like, it's just a bed. Obviously, okay, I know, I get it. They're trying to be, like, environmentally friendly and not cut down trees and all that nonsense. But, like, why do you have to say, yes, it can hold two people? But also, if you'd like to have sex, you could totally do that. Like, what are they trying to do here?
Hey, if you want to laugh, here's the quote. Sure. Here is the quote. As long as they stick to just two people in bed, they should be strong enough to support the load.
Yeah, support the load. That. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Bed manufacturers Airweave promised the beds have been tested through rigorous stress tests. Quote,
We've conducted
experiments like dropping weights on the top of the beds, end quote, a spokesperson told the AFP. As long as they stick to the two people in the bed, they should be strong enough to support the load.
Oh, my God. Oh, and might I just say, another quote from this article, literally two paragraphs above that said, this year's Olympic athletes will be sleeping on cardboard beds, but they can still go for the gold beyond the sheets, as long as they don't have threesomes. Go for the gold between the sheets, bro. Why? New York Post. What are you talking about?
Okay.
I can't even.
Oh God, where was it? At the 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, where usage of dating app Tinder soared almost 350%, organizers doled out 110,000 condoms to participants. London organizers supplied 150,000 condoms to the 2012 Olympic athletes, and the raunchiest in game history, Rio de Janeiro, 4 years later, where athletes received 450,000, equivalent to 42 condoms each.
Who the hell needs 42 condoms?
An Olympic athlete.
One or two days? Like, really? Oh, my God. Jesus.
Now, without getting too graphic, who am I kidding? I'm going to get very graphic. As long as things, let's just call it things, stay in the condom, so long as you don't spill it on cardboard, because cardboard kind of gets squishy when it's wet.
Yeah, but you also have to think about all that sweatiness going on between the sheets to get the gold, right?
Ew.
Oh, I can't believe they even said that. Why would they say that? This is so weird, man. Like, why is this even a news article? Why is this a thing? Oh, let's show everyone our cardboard beds. By the way, you can totally have sex in them and it's totally fine. Like, really?
I think it has to do with them thinking that climate change is a thing.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess it's supposed to be environmentally friendly and all that wonderful stuff. But like,
even though plants are basically, even though CO2 is what keeps plants alive.
Oh no, I know, but like, they went weird with it. Like, they went off the rails here.
Oh, and yeah, the left has went further off the rails, saying something like Netflix or streaming services is now the cause of climate change.
What? Yeah. Yeah. But, oh, okay, just so you guys know, the title of this article is Frisky 2020 Olympic Athletes Can Hook Up in Cardboard Beds, But No Threesomes. That's literally the title of this article. I'm sorry, but like, what in the bonkers were these people thinking? People don't want to read about athletes, you know, bonking each other on cardboard beds. That's not what people want to hear. No. They want to know, like, what their favorite athlete, like, what their fans of is going to be doing, like, sport-related-wise, not... This.
It's the Winter Olympics. I want to see the first guy to the bottom of the mountain on his snowboard. I want to see you know what? I love the Canadians. I want to see them sweeping the ice in front of that giant thing that they slide.
Oh, curling?
Curling, I think.
Yeah. Rub that ice.
Curling's fun to watch, surprisingly.
Friction. Yeah, you rub that smooth.
But yeah,
okay,
and what a thing to talk about. Instead of the sports, let's talk about the athletes and their sex lives. Jesus.
Right? Like, okay, I would love to see a follow up article to this, as it's like, so what happened during the 2020 Olympics? Oh, did these cardboard beds, you know, hold their weight?
You know, every single one of them has collapsed.
Avera, not to throw you under the bus, have they ever heard of furry conventions?
Oh God! Well, if we had cardboard beds, you know what? I'm not gonna go any further with that. yes. Yeah, all of that.
Indeed.
Use your imagination. Jesus.
I'm afraid of my imagination.
What are you guys thinking? I'm thinking about all the booze that spilled in the bed.
Well, that is a factor.
I'm still thinking about all that black mold I inhaled at Furpok, which is probably still killing me.
I mean, okay, so I guess you could argue that using cardboard beds is like a much cheaper and efficient way of, like, you know, mass housing for people. I think they had what, like 10,000 athletes.
Don't they have? Doesn't metal beds even exist? Oh yeah, they do.
Oh yeah, well they do, but cardboard could be folded up and easily shipped and whatnot for cheap. So maybe that's what they're going for. But
get an inflatable bed.
Go to IKEA and pay twice as much.
IKEA.
How biodegradable is cardboard, though?
All right, so we have any more fun live comments before we go into our last thing?
Just moist.
Hmm?
Moist.
Hey, you guys can hear me, right?
Yes.
No, I did not hear you at all.
Yeah, I was – I was getting some feedback, so I didn't know if it was a problem.
You said IKEA. Like you said IKEA, and then you reminded me of this. That one part of the Metalocalypse episode, I think if you know about that TV show. Metalocalypse on Adult Swim.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it.
But anyways, yeah, a couple of live comments is...
Death Clock goes to IKEA.
Nope,
I don't know. This is my first time, so I'm kind of lost in this.
All right, that's okay.
Yeah. Anyways.
All right. Well, into a little bit more of a somber topic. There have been some iconic individuals that we've lost this year, especially recently, like very recently. I know, Cross, you did have something to say about a very influential musician. who has recently passed.
Yeah, so the drummer for Rush, Neil Peart, which I just learned recently is actually how you say his name, is Peart. I know everybody calls him Pert, but it's Peart. But anyway, he passed away on the 7th. He had brain cancer, and he was fighting it for, I believe they said, about 2.5-3 years. And as a result, when I think it was when he was first diagnosed, that's when the band officially retired. And then his disease just got worse and then just succumbed to it.
Oh, wow.
He was, in 1983, Neil Peart was awarded, he was nominated or entered into the whole, I forget what Hall of Fame it was, but at the time he was the youngest person to have ever been awarded that particular, I think it was the Drummers Hall of Fame or something, whatever it was called. But,
oh yes, I heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if any of you guys actually know the band or the music that they play or, you know, what it is that they were doing. But a lot of their songs, well, first off, Peart was the lyricist on top of being the drummer. So most, if not all of the songs that Rush performs are all written by Peart.
Possibly illegal drugs kill his brain.
It could be, being that the time that, you know, that they were the most popular in the 70s and the 80s. But, I mean, I saw this band 3 times at Jones Beach in New York, and each time was significantly more better. I get more better? Better than yeah. the previous. And the last tour that I went to was their Clockworks and Angels tour, which was insane. But getting back on point, a lot of the songs that he wrote, they told different stories either about parts of his life or there was some political events that they sang about, but they didn't, not like political where like they would take one side or another. Like there's a song called The Weapon, and it's literally, the song is about the US and the Soviet Union during the Cold War. And it's told in the perspective of a guy that's like afraid of the government getting these weapons and using them against them.
Okay.
They have another song called The Manhattan Project, which is a song about the development of the atomic bomb during World War II. And yes. then at the end of the song, they talk about how it was dropped on Japan. It was another song. One of my favorite songs is Subdivisions, which that talks about, I guess, Neil Peart's struggles living in the suburbs, I guess, as a kid. Another song, Red Barchetta, which is about... being that the song was written in the 70s, so it was probably about like a 1950s Ferrari. So the song, it starts out, it's him, he goes out to his uncle's farm, and in the barn is this old Ferrari that he keeps in pristine condition. And on the weekends, he goes out there and he takes the car out. And in this song, he takes the car out and he's just driving around and he finds another car and races against them. So that was basically that song. What? Jesus, so many of them.
I haven't heard of Rush, but I've heard of a bunch of electronic artists. I even listen to Death Clock sometimes.
I haven't heard of them.
Yeah, it's a death metal band.
Well, I mean, staying to the topic of Neil Peart and Rush, my gosh. The music back then told a story.
Yes, and the first time
it really did.
The first time I got introduced to Rush was in the game Need for Speed Hot Pursuit 2, and that was right after, or right around the time that their Vapor Trails album got released, and the song in that game was One Little Victory, and it's a good song that you can race to, and that's when, then I bought the Vapor Trails album, and it turned out that my uncle that lived next door to me at the time was a huge Rush fan when he was growing up. So I just started slowly getting into it, and then it was 2000, I think it was 2006 or 2007 was the first time that I saw them perform live, and that was right after their, what was the name of that album? I know all the songs on it, but I can't remember what the name of that album was. But, and this is, they're like 50 years old, and they're making new music. So that's what I said, whoa, they're making a new album? Like, what? They were, like... They haven't made an album since 2001. And so then I went to that concert. And then the other two concerts that I went to, I think they were just the kind of band that liked to tour for fun, because their Time Machine tour, I think they just did because they just felt like doing it. And that tour was amazing. And then they released another album called Clockworks and Angels, which I looked at that album and it was just like they just took a bunch of songs, new, old and new, and threw it on like an album and then just released it. Like, oh yeah. And then they did a tour. Like nothing new was on it, but they just did a tour. It was just insane.
One thing that was mentioned in that Rolling Stones article that I was just screen sharing is that when music started getting newer and music started evolving into something else, they were like, well, we're still young enough to incorporate into our music, and we're ballsy enough to say we like that music, so we're going to make new music with that type of, what do you call it, genre, I guess?
Yeah. And you do notice it, like, because in the 80s, that's when... Oh, sorry, I didn't mean
yeah, that. Their genres evolved with the times, and I have to appreciate that. And don't judge me if I'm, you know, whatever. Tom Sawyer was one of my favorites.
I like that song, but Jesus Christ, I hear that song so much, I just get sick and tired of listening to it.
I know. Don't judge me.
But, I mean, that's the song everybody knows. It's a good song, but like I can't listen to it because I just heard it so many hundreds of thousands of times. That and Limelight. Like Limelight's another good song, but anytime I hear somebody reference Rush, it's either Limelight or Tom Sawyer. Like don't you know they have like 16 other albums, right?
Yeah.
Fear Factory, I can't remember how many albums they got, but Fear Factory's album that really changed the face of metal that to what it is today was The Manufacturer from 1995.
You know what? On the live comments, I need to agree with Boxcar. Rush is legit and old school, on par with Tom Petty and other wicked ones. Yes, sir.
Yeah, legit old school, though. Right on.
They have a song about, well, what people perceive to be as the Holocaust. I mean, they said that when they released that song, they said it could have been told in the perspective of a political prisoner or something. But basically what it is, the song is called Red Sector A.
I haven't heard
And it tells a story of somebody that's caught in some I've always perceived it the Holocaust, like many other people. And they go through the song about how terrible the conditions are. And then at the end of the song, whoever's liberating them comes, and they liberate the camp. But it's still the song doesn't really have, I guess, that good of a happy ending, because it's just talking about the struggles and everybody's dying and everybody's getting sick and all this stuff. And then the song, I didn't realize the song Red Sector A was where the band sat when they watched the shuttle Columbia take off in the 80s. And they wrote a song about that too. It was called Countdown. So they got songs about a lot of different things, and it's just
and all their music told stories. It painted pictures in your head as you were listening to the lyrics. It just told epic stories.
Yeah, it's just insane what Peart was able to come up with when he was writing these songs. It's especially with a lot of the things that he went through, like his daughter was driving up to college and she was killed in a car accident. And then 5 months later, his wife died of, I think it was cancer.
Yep.
And then he that's when he quote unquote retired from the band and took a cross country motorcycle trip through the United States. And then after that, I forget what album it was that they worked on after that, but it wasn't long before Vapor Trails. Vapor Trails might've been the one that they came back to, but well, I can't remember.
I mean, we pay homage to the greats that have left us, as well as telling stories. And in regards to telling stories, we had another story that we was going to talk about tonight.
Yes, and this would be the death of Christopher Tolkien. Now, for those of you who might not know who this is, Christopher Tolkien was the son of J.R.R. Tolkien, who wrote Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Now, without Christopher, we would not have had a book called The Silmarillion, or
the entire encyclopedia history of Middle-earth itself, as well as the publication of all of Tolkien's poems, his songs, short stories, all of that. And he really did a lot for the Lord of the Rings world. And it's sad to see him go. I believe he was in his 90s when he passed on. Perhaps 95, I think.
He was 95 years old, yep.
95, yeah. And he lived a full life. You know, God bless him. And thank you for all that he's done. Now, I remember when I first got the Silmarillion, I was really excited. And, you know, like, these works, like, they really take you back into, like, this magical world. Like, it's just so large and encompassing. Like, it's really incredible what, you know, Tolkien has done, and that his son was able to expand upon that. And now he's no longer with us. But he really did accomplish a lot. So,
I personally never read Lord of the Rings, but I can appreciate what it is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, of course. It's a very iconic legendarium, you know, books, movies, countless different type of media. It's really incredible. Full disclosure, Lord of the Rings is my favorite movie of all time, and I consider, like, you know, 1, 2, and 3, like, one movie, kind of, because, like, it's all, like, one continuous story, but, oh my god, I love it so much.
It's funny, because I finally, after all this time, got to watch Lord of the Rings. Let me see, it was a couple of weeks ago I watched the first one, and then 2 nights ago I watched the last two in the trilogy, back to back, 6 hours. My eyes wanted to bleed, but at the same time, I could not peel them off my TV screen. I'm like, wow, this is absolutely beautiful. I mean, I think they filmed it all in New Zealand.
Yes, yes.
And
the sets are still there, and they have, like, this this Lord of the Rings tour. I don't know if Jolt actually went there. I know he went to some of the sets. He did go to Rivendell.
Yes. Let me screenshot that if I can.
One of the places they shot in the movie, the gateway to Rivendell, our beloved purple squirrel was actually there. Yeah, how cool is that? Yeah! There's Jolt on his way to Rivendell to go meet the elves. How awesome.
Yeah, Jolt would do something like that.
Yeah, of course he would. Yeah, there he is.
The squirrels in their forests.
Yep,
got to see little hobbit houses and everything. The little dock
fishing
at.
Oh, beautiful.
Wow, that's absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, that's where the hobbits live.
Crushed apple cider.
There you go.
Oh my god. All right.
Oh, there's what's his name's front door.
Oh, yes. Bilbo.
Yes.
Bilbo's house. Awesome. All right, we got any other live comments or anything?
I don't see anything.
Nope.
Yeah, we're a little quiet, but you know what? That's okay. It's better than a bad opening to a season. Quiet, right. Quiet is good. No news is good news, right?
I would say even bad press is a good press, but
there is some
truth. That can be debated.
There is some truth.
Yeah.
To that.
All right, so I guess we can close up for the episode.
Alrighty. Any last closing thoughts?
Keep ribbon in heaven, Neil Peart. Peart. Jesus, I did it.
Close.
Peart, 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 Peart. I gotta drill that into my brain because I keep saying it wrong.
And as far as I go, definitely need to respect that because, I mean, what amazing lyrics. What amazing... what's his name from Foo Fighters? I forget his name. Dave something.
I know who you're talking about. I can't remember.
Even he's like, yeah, you know what? We all called him the professor because we all learned from him. And Droll, I think his name is. Dave... No. I don't know. But he was mentioned in that Rolling Stone thing. And wow, if Dave can say that, Jesus Christ. I love them.
And if you know nothing about Neil Peart, just go to YouTube and type in Neil Peart drum solo, and he'll tell you all you need to know about his performance as a drummer. And if you want to know his like how he did well as a lyricist, just look up any Rush song. But his drum solos are insane. First of all, his setup is insane. It like wraps around him. It's like a full like encirclement of drums and cymbals. And he just, for like, I remember seeing him live for like 10 straight minutes, just banging the crap out of every single drum he had up there. And his whole thing like spins around. It's crazy. Just YouTube it. It's insane.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, it spins around. What the heck? Yeah, it's like on a turntable, so he can activate it. So, because when he does his solos, he wants to face the crowd, and there's parts of his solo where he wants to use the drums that are behind him. So he just hits a thing, and it spins around, so the drums in the back become in front of him.
Oh, that's cool.
That's pretty.
Yeah, it's right, it's nuts.
Sparky, you got anything?
What?
Closing statement? Anything?
I can barely hear you.
Do you have any
closing statements? Statement.
Something basement, but I can't hear.
All right, so
Sparky.
Close enough.
I guess it's because he's wearing a fursuit head and his voice sounds muffled like further distance.
Can you not hear me? Am I?
I can hear him 5x5, so I don't know if there's a problem on your end.
Wrong.
All right.
You know what? We'll forgive him because he's cute.
I guess the only thing that I have to say tonight, everyone, is thank you for watching. Thanks for tuning in. This has been episode 1 of season 3 of the Raiders Round.
There's been something about hiking in right
week from now on. And please don't interrupt.
Hey, they're
okay.
Anyways.
There's one more article, though. This hiking is racist now?
Not tonight, it's not.
Not enough time for that. So, all right, guys. That has been Season 3, Episode 1. Happy New Year's, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
It's actually a year. There's 1 year.
Okay. Bye.